Our first item is from the WashingtonPost.com, May 24, 2011, with the headline, Netanyahu Schools Congress. The following are excerpts from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's address to Congress.
In an unstable Middle East, Israel is the one anchor of stability. In a region of shifting alliances, Israel is America's unwavering ally. Israel has always been pro-American. Israel will always be pro-American. An epic battle is now underway in the Middle East between tyranny and freedom, shaking the earth from the Khyber Pass to the Straits of Gibraltar. Now, this historic moment holds the promise of a new dawn of freedom and opportunity. There are millions of young people out there who are determined to change their future. They muster courage. They risk their lives. They demand dignity. They desire liberty. These extraordinary scenes in Tunis and Cairo evoke those of Berlin and Prague in 1989. So as we share the hopes of these young people throughout the Middle East and Iran, we must also remember that those hopes could be snuffed out, as they were in Tehran in 1979. You remember what happened then? The brief democratic spring in Tehran was cut short by a ferocious and unforgiving tyranny. And it's this same tyranny that smothered Lebanon's democratic Cedar Revolution and inflicted on that long-suffering country the medieval rule of Hezbollah. So today, the Middle East stands at a fateful crossroads. This path of liberty is not paved by elections alone. It's paved when governments permit protests in town squares, when limits are placed on the powers of rulers, when judges are beholden to laws and not men, and when human rights cannot be crushed by tribal loyalties or mob rule. Israel has always embraced this path in a Middle East that has long rejected it. In a region where women are stoned, gays are hanged, Christians are persecuted, Israel stands out. Courageous Arab protesters are now struggling to secure these very same rights for their peoples, for their societies. Of the 300 million Arabs in the Middle East and North Africa, only Israel's Arab citizens enjoy real democratic rights. Of those 300 million Arabs, less than one half of 1% are truly free, and they're all citizens of Israel. This startling fact reveals a basic truth. Israel is not what is wrong about the Middle East. Israel is what is right about the Middle East. We long for the day when Israel will be one of many real democracies in the Middle East. Because I believe that a Middle East that is genuinely democratic will be a Middle East truly at peace. But while we hope for the best, and while we work for the best, we must also recognize that powerful forces oppose this future. Foremost among these forces is Iran. The tyranny in Tehran brutalizes its own people. It supports attacks against American troops in Afghanistan and in Iraq. It subjugates Lebanon and Gaza. It sponsors terror worldwide. For the greatest danger of all could soon be upon us. a militant Islamic regime armed with nuclear weapons. Now, the threat to my country cannot be overstated. Those who dismiss it are sticking their heads in the sand. Less than 7 decades after 6 million Jews were murdered, Iran's leaders deny the Holocaust of the Jewish people while calling for the annihilation of the Jewish state. Leaders who spew such venom should be banned from every respectable forum on the planet. But there's something that makes the outrage even greater. It's the lack of outrage. Because in much of the international community, the calls for our destruction are met with utter silence. It's even worse, because there are many who rush to condemn Israel for defending itself against Iran's terror proxies. Not you. Not America. You've acted differently. You've condemned the Iranian regime for its genocidal aims. You've passed tough sanctions against Iran. History will salute you, America. President Obama has said that the United States is determined to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. The president successfully led the Security Council at the UN to adopt sanctions against Iran. You and Congress passed even tougher sanctions. Now, these words and deeds are vitally important. Yet the Ayatollah regime briefly suspended its nuclear weapons program only once, in 2003, when it feared the possibility of military action. And that same year, Muammar Gaddafi gave up his nuclear weapons program, and for the same reason. The more Iran believes that all options are on the table, the less the chance of confrontation. And this is why I ask you to continue to send an unequivocal message that America will never permit Iran to develop nuclear weapons. Now, as for Israel, if history has taught the Jewish people anything, it is that we must take calls for our destruction seriously. We are a nation that rose from the ashes of the Holocaust. When we say never again, we mean never again. Israel always reserves the right to defend itself. My friends, while Israel will be ever vigilant in its defense, we'll never give up our quest for peace. Now, we've achieved historic peace agreements with Egypt and Jordan, and these have held up for decades. The peace agreements between Israel and Egypt and Israel and Jordan are vital, but they're not enough. We must also find a way to forge a lasting peace with the Palestinians. 2 years ago, I publicly committed to a solution of two states for two peoples, a Palestinian state alongside a Jewish state, as the leader of Israel, because I recognize that in a genuine peace, we'll be required to give up parts of the ancestral Jewish homeland. And you have to understand this. In Judea and Samaria, the Jewish people are not foreign occupiers. We're not the British in India. We're not the Belgians in the Congo. This is the land of our forefathers, the land of Israel, to which Abraham brought the idea of one God, where David set out to confront Goliath, and where Isaiah saw a vision of eternal peace. No distortion of history could deny the 4,000-year-old bond between the Jewish people and the Jewish land. But there is another truth. The Palestinians share this small land with us. We seek a peace in which they'll be neither Israel's subjects nor its citizens. They should enjoy a national life of dignity as a free, viable, and independent people living in their own state. They should enjoy a prosperous economy where their creativity and initiative can flourish. In the last 2 years, the Palestinians have begun to build a better life for themselves. By the way, Prime Minister Fayyad has led this effort on their part, and I wish him a speedy recovery from his recent operation. We've helped the Palestinian economic growth by removing hundreds of barriers and roadblocks to the free flow of goods and people. And the results have been nothing short of remarkable. The Palestinian economy is booming. It's growing by more than 10% a year. And Palestinian cities, they have shopping malls, movie theaters, restaurants, banks. They even have e-businesses, but you can't see that when you visit them. And all of this is happening without peace. So imagine what could happen with peace if the benefits of peace with the Palestinians are so clear. Why has peace eluded us? Because all six Israeli prime ministers, since the signing of the Oslo Accords, agreed to establish a Palestinian state, myself included. So why has peace not been achieved? Because so far, the Palestinians have been unwilling to accept a Palestinian state if it meant accepting a Jewish state alongside it. You see, our conflict has never been about the establishment of a Palestinian state. It's always been about the existence of the Jewish state. This is what this conflict is about. In 1947, the UN voted to partition the land into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Jews said yes, the Palestinians said no. In recent years, the Palestinians twice refused generous offers by Israeli prime ministers to establish a Palestinian state on virtually all the territory won by Israel in the Six-Day War. They were simply unwilling to end the conflict. And I regret to say this. They continue to educate their children to hate. They continue to name public squares after terrorists. And worst of all, they continue to perpetuate the fantasy that Israel will one day be flooded by the descendants of Palestinian refugees. My friends, this must come to an end. I stood before my people and I said, I will accept a Palestinian state. It's time for President Abbas to stand before his people and say, I will accept a Jewish state. Those six words will change history. They'll make it clear to the Palestinians that this conflict must come to an end. And those six words will convince the people of Israel that they have a true partner for peace. With such a partner, the Palestinian, or rather the Israeli people, will be prepared to make a far-reaching compromise. I will be prepared to make a far-reaching compromise. This compromise must reflect the dramatic demographic changes that have occurred since 1967. The vast majority of the 650,000 Israelis who live beyond the 1967 lines reside in neighborhoods and suburbs of Jerusalem and Greater Tel Aviv. The status of the settlements will be decided only in negotiations. But we must also be honest. In any real peace agreement, in any peace agreement that ends the conflict, some settlements will end up beyond Israel's borders. Now, the precise delineation of those borders must be negotiated. We'll be generous about the size of the future Palestinian state. But as President Obama said, the border will be different than the one that existed on June 4, 1967. Israel will not return to the indefensible boundaries of 1967. All of you, and the President too, have referred to Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people. Just as you've been talking about a future Palestinian state is the homeland of the Palestinian people. Well, Jews from around the world have a right to immigrate to the one and only Jewish state. And Palestinians from around the world should have a right to immigrate, if they so choose, to a Palestinian state. And here's what this means. It means that the Palestinian refugee problem will be resolved outside the borders of Israel. And as for Jerusalem, only a democratic Israel has protected the freedom of worship for all faiths in the city. Jerusalem must never again be divided. Jerusalem must remain the united capital of Israel. I know this is a difficult issue for Palestinians, but I believe that with creativity and with goodwill, a solution can be found. So this is the peace I plan to forge with a Palestinian partner committed to peace. But you know very well that in the Middle East, the only peace that will hold is the peace you can defend. So peace must be anchored in security. In recent years, Israel withdrew from South Lebanon and from Gaza. We thought we'd get peace. That's not what we got. We got 12,000 rockets fired from those areas on our cities, on our children, by Hezbollah and Hamas. The UN peacekeepers in Lebanon, they failed to prevent the smuggling of this weaponry. The European observers in Gaza, they evaporated overnight. So if Israel simply walked out of the territories, the flow of weapons into a future Palestinian state would be unchecked. And missiles fired from it could reach virtually every home in Israel in less than a minute. Imagine there's a siren going on now, and we have less than 60 seconds to find shelter from an incoming rocket. You think anybody can live that way? Well, we're not going to live that way either. The truth is that Israel needs unique security arrangements because of its unique size. It's one of the smallest countries in the world. Israel on the 1967 lines would be half the width of the Washington Beltway. So it's therefore vital, absolutely vital, that a Palestinian state be fully demilitarized. And it's vital, absolutely vital, that Israel maintain a long-term military presence along the Jordan River. Solid security arrangements on the ground are necessary not only to protect the peace, they're necessary to protect Israel in case the peace unravels. Because in our unstable region, no one can guarantee that our peace partners today will be there tomorrow. And my friends, when I say tomorrow, I don't mean some distant time in the future. I mean tomorrow. Peace can only be achieved around the negotiating table. The Palestinian attempt to impose a settlement through the United Nations will not bring peace. It should be forcefully opposed by all those who want to see this conflict end. Peace cannot be imposed. It must be negotiated. But peace can only be negotiated with partners committed to peace. And Hamas is not a partner for peace. Hamas remains committed to Israel's destruction and to terrorism. They have a charter. That charter not only calls for the obliteration of Israel, it says, kill the Jews everywhere you find them. Hamas's leader condemned the killing of Osama bin Laden and praised him as a holy warrior. Israel is prepared to sit down today and negotiate peace with the Palestinian Authority. I believe we can fashion a brilliant future for our children. But Israel will not negotiate with a Palestinian government backed by the Palestinian version of Al-Qaeda. That we will not do. So I say to President Abbas, tear up your pact with Hamas. Sit down and negotiate. Make peace with the Jewish state. And if you do, I promise you this. Israel will not be the last country to welcome a Palestinian state as a new member of the United Nations. It will be the first to do so.